From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. On today's show, we talk with Dr. Mona Hanna Attisha. She's tested positive for COVID-19.
Started a couple of weeks ago with what I thought was a bad cold.
This pediatrician is famous for her work during the Flint water crisis. We'll unpack the new public health crisis with her. If you're in the mood for some music discovery from the comfort of your own home, we're taking you to a dusty record shop.
And I tell people, here are the listening stations with the headphones. Now get your hands dirty.
Brad Hales from People's Records in Detroit shares what he's listening to. And we're going to hear from the very best source on school closures, kids.
I want to see my friends at a play date, not at school.
I want to go back like today, but I can't.
Those stories coming up on today's edition of Stateside. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. First off today, huge thanks to Laura Weber Davis and the rest of the team for holding it down while I took a few days. When we made spring plans, I don't think any of us thought we'd be spending it this way, but such is life right now. Later on in the show, we'll speak with Flint's best-known pediatrician, Mona Hanna Attisha. She'll describe her experience recovering from the new coronavirus. But first, aside from folks who are infected with COVID-19 and their families, the people who may have gotten the biggest news yesterday were very likely Michigan's kids. Governor Gretchen Whitmer has made it official. They are not going back to school this year. At my house, we were spending a lot of the past week trying to figure out homeschooling and how that would work for Junior.
Yeah. So let me get this straight. You're going to bounce on the exercise ball the whole time we're doing this.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
That's
open it
pretty
up.
Much it.
I need a piece of paper.
She's in the fourth grade, so this goes a little bit beyond finding ways to play all day. She's not a fan of the impressive suite of educational software her school has provided, but there is this one online math game that she's crazy about.
George walked around two rectangular parks.
That's the... Oh, man, the chalk broke.
Already, Mama!
I know. Okay.
One measured one and one-sixth by two.
We're still in that magic place where I can help her with math kilometers without taking online refresher courses myself. So we work through fractions. One of us is definitely faster than the other.
Okay. Oh, wait, because you don't have to convert them.
Yes! Because it's all the same denominator.
And then there are the attention span issues. Seriously, how do teachers deal with this all day?
First add the big digits. What, 7 plus 7 plus 6 plus 6?
We'd gotten a few problems knocked out when my daughter suddenly leaped off of the exercise ball and glued herself to the window.
Hi.
One of her best friends was out on a family walk. This is what they do now. They wave to each other on the edge of the tree lawn. And they think about the days when we're actually going to let them be in the same room together again.
How you guys doing?
My name's Madison. I'm in fourth grade. It's interesting being in the COVID-19 because you can't go places, you can't see friends, even when they live next door. But it's a good time to get home, do some things, get some things done. Like, I've cleaned my entire room.
How do you feel about the fact that school is canceled for the rest of the year?
Sad that I might have to have summer school.
I am the ghost of Fun Past. It has died.
But other than that, I'm actually kind of excited.
When we got back inside, I got down to brass tacks with Junior.
So, how are you feeling about all this?
Awesome.
Really?
Okay, well, I like being home from school.
Yeah. I mean, you like your teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And you like your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you like some of the things that you do at school.
Sure.
What are some of the things that you do like at school?
Gym.
PE class.
Art. Music.
Music, definitely.
Library.
Definitely library.
Occasionally math and writing.
Do you feel like those are all things that you can do at home as much as you did at school?
I do a lot of art. And gym, I run around a lot. In the yard.
What you're hearing is generally how it is with her, but what she's not talking about are those times when she gets really upset about things her dad and I see as relatively small, her angst over whether she's going to have any kind of summer this year. And we do know kids in the neighborhood whose parents live in other states and they're missing them, or kids who know that family members are sick.
Do you really think it's going to be okay for so many kids to not have any school for like 3, 4, 5 months that they usually don't have?
I mean, I like being able to stay home and do my schoolwork from home, but I think that people should be able to go to school. Or, like, I think it's a problem that people don't go to school.
Do you think Daddy and I are as tough on you as your teachers are?
Oh, no! I mean, my teachers aren't that tough on me.
But we're not as tough on you as they are. We don't make you work as hard.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've spent half the day eating Starbursts, so.
This child needs help. Please send toothpaste. The range of thoughts on school closures varies widely among kids and parents. Michigan Radio has plenty of both, so some of our staff, ever the journalists, have asked their kids what they thought of the school closure news.
A little microphone. Ha! 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 Hi! Ask a question.
Okay, so Juniper, today they announced that there's going to be no more school for the rest of the school year. What do you think about that?
Yay.
Why is it yay?
Because I love no school.
Why do you love no school? You love seeing your friends.
But I want to see my friends at a play date, not at school.
Oh. You would rather just play?
Yeah.
What do you think? There's no more daycare for this year.
What do you think about not going to school for the rest of the school year?
What do you think? I don't like school, so what would be the answer?
No.
You think it's pretty cool?
Yeah.
What about recess?
I don't like recess.
All right, so what's your name?
Kaylee.
What grade are you in?
Second.
Okay, so there's no more school for the rest of the year. How do you feel?
Okay.
Why?
Because I really miss my friends.
But that means you, so you feel good or bad?
I feel bad.
You do? You want to go back?
Yeah. I like that we don't have to go to school because I can spend more time with Mommy.
More time with me?
Yes.
Okay. More time exciting.
With Mommy.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Cool. It's exciting for me too.
What do you think about no more school for the rest of the year?
Bad!
How come?
Because then you don't get to see your friends.
Do you want to say that in a normal voice?
I have a normal voice.
Then how about you? What do you think about no more school till for the rest of the year?
I'm going to be bored.
Actually, why don't you finish eating what is in your mouth?
What's your name?
Jordan.
What grade are you in?
Do I count like my grade? Six.
Okay, so there's no more school for the rest of the year. How do you feel?
I don't like it because I don't want to stay trapped in this house for the rest of like the summer. And the rest of the school year. I don't want to stay here. Like, I'm going to miss my friends and stuff. And only like some of my teachers in my classes. But like, I hate it here.
So you're excited to go back in the fall?
Yeah.
And not excited about being here?
Yeah. I want to go back, like, today, but I can't, so.
All right. Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Thanks.
Special thanks to all the Michigan Radio kids and parents who talked to us. Michigan Radio has been spending time talking at a safe distance with high school students as well. One senior from Community High School in Ann Arbor weighed in by phone on how she's doing this week, the week that was supposed to be spring break.
Hi, it is 1:30 p.m. on, gosh, I don't even know what the date is. My dad is very nervous about everything that's going on. He has had friends of friends that have died, and he's very anxious about going out to the store, so I made him a cloth face mask that he can wear out to maybe make him feel a little bit better. It is 4 o'clock on March 30th. Things are somehow getting worse and getting better at the same time. They're getting worse because I'm getting more and more bored and more hopeless about how all of this is going, yet at the same time it's getting better because I'm learning how to cope with boredom and finding things to do. Yeah. All right. Goodbye. Hi. It is 10:18 a.m. on April 1st. Right now, one of the biggest things during this coronavirus outbreak that I'm struggling with is that I can't see my boyfriend. The last time I saw him was 2 weeks ago today, and I feel like I'm drifting apart from him, and I'm scared that our relationship isn't going to survive this because we're starting to fight and argue a lot. The way I'm coping with it is I've started learning to crochet. It's a very odd shape, but I'm crocheting it, and I'm proud of myself. I just learned that school is going to be closed for the rest of the year. A couple weeks ago, I walked out of that building without really saying goodbye to anybody because I thought I would be back in 3 weeks. I didn't even realize my last day was my last day of high school. I'm sad. And now all I can think about is what's going to happen. Is there going to be a prom? Is there going to be a graduation? I've been looking forward to the end of my senior year for, what, 13 years now? And now that it's here, I'm not going to have that senior experience. Hey, maybe we'll be the first class to have a virtual graduation. All right, bye.
That's a member of the senior class at Community High School in Ann Arbor. That piece was produced by Michigan Radio's Rachel Ishikawa. Support for Michigan Radio comes from the Michigan Health Endowment Fund and the Children's Foundation. This may not be a good time to go to a record store, but you can still discover new music from home. And why not start today with Brad Hales from People's Records in Detroit?
Honestly, I would rather teach someone to fish than fish for them. So my role there is to try to get the things out so you can look at them. And I tell people, here are the listening stations with the headphones. Now get your hands dirty.
We're spending some time with Brad after this break. It's time for another session of our semi-regular series talking to folks who work in Michigan's record shops about what they're listening to. And our guest today from Detroit's own People's Records is Brad Hales. Brad, welcome to Stateside.
Hi, April. Thank you for having me on the show.
Could you tell me what kinds of music you find yourself being drawn to these days?
Well, I focus on Michigan music myself, but that could be a lot of different things. And I don't solely listen to music from the state, but everything I selected today is from here. I think if you take a deeper look at it, you can become really obsessed with just studying what happened in this state because it's very rich.
It's got to be said, there aren't that many states in the lower 48 where you can listen local almost exclusively, but Michigan definitely seems like one of them.
A lot has happened here in the, musically, and just it resonates with me because we had different influences in Detroit with jazz music and gospel music that I think give a lot of the music a certain beauty and richness that hopefully you'll hear in some of the tracks today.
I've got to believe having the store in the city, you just have access to people's stories in a way that a lot of other places do not.
We do. It's kind of mind-blowing the people that might pop through the door sometimes that we get to interact with and hear, you know, what they went through or what they're doing now. You know, it's really interesting. Anybody from Mike Banks and Derek May, you never know. And you might see rock or punk legends, you know, as well around. So it's exciting in that sense that a lot of these people are still out there, you know, walking among us.
What was the first track you brought for us today?
I wanted to talk about Johnny Mae Matthews. I think she's a really interesting figure in Michigan music because not only was she a pioneer as a Black female songwriter, artist, and producer, but she was also the first African-American female record label owner. She owned several record companies, just like Berry Gordy did, and she even started a year before him. And so I think her story is especially important. Most of us know her from the Temptations movie you'd see on TV late at night, where there's this kind of wicked woman who has the Temptations before Motown did and cheats them and buys a Cadillac and then da-da-da.
Sort of playing the Morris Day role in the film.
Yeah, and I believe her family might have even received a settlement for the way that she was portrayed there because it wasn't accurate. She actually was an inspiration and kind of helped these people get to where they eventually went, you know. But she's a fantastic artist, and this is one of my favorite pieces of music of all time. It's I Have No Choice.
Okay, let's listen. Sometimes Johnny May Matthews is credited as the person who taught Berry Gordy everything that he knew.
Wow.
About the recording industry. What do you hear in this track that is fundamental to sounds that both she and Berry Gordy were putting out there at the time?
Well, I mean, the elegance of it. This is a new kind of R&B, you know, developing in the 60s that's really lush and beautiful, you know. So, I mean, that's one thing that Motown also had. It was, like, transcendent and maybe the roles that were expected, you know, of Black people. Like, you know, very sophisticated and, you know, and classy, you know, like elegant R&B. So I think that's one thing that they both shared on that track. And generally, her stuff is a lot earthier and more blues-influenced than Motown came to be.
It looks like the second track you brought for us is a really great Stax Records artist, Daryl Banks.
Well, Daryl Banks actually came to Detroit from Buffalo and wound up kind of getting absorbed by the Stax empire, but was an independent artist here, and he only lived to age 28. The Metro Times featured a piece on Banks about maybe 10 years ago now with his incredible life story. He was shot in an altercation over a romance or a failed romance by an off-duty Detroit police officer.
Yeah, it looks like he seriously got involved with the wrong police officer's girlfriend.
Right. Either way, his life was cut tragically short due to gun violence and this, whatever happened there. And we're left with, sadly, few recordings because many soul fans recognize his single, Open the Door to Your Heart and Our Love is in the Pocket, as being one of the greatest double-sided soul records that ever came out of Detroit, rare or common. It's just such a great song that definitely gave Motown a run for its money, probably using some of their own musicians. The track that I brought today, though, is a special find from this past winter from a man whose father passed away. He was a TV repairman, and he had a habit of buying 45s from people when he went to their homes to repair their televisions. And so when the father passed away, the son brought in the records, and he had this incredible metal acetate. It's a studio reference recording, a one-of-a-kind thing that they might send an artist or producer home from. It's a piece of metal with lacquer that they cut a one-of-a-kind recording home for reference, so you can take it home and listen to it after the studio and see if you like the mix and how it sounds and everything. Or maybe they would give it to a DJ for, to hype it, before the record is released. So anyway, this flaking metal acetate comes in with a new song that no one's ever heard before from Daryl Banks from a year before he passed away.
When the son of the guy who found this record brought in this box of stuff to the shop, what was your reaction?
Well, I knew who Banks was, and I knew that I didn't recognize the song, but it required a day of working on it to get it to the point that you'll hear in the recording, which this thing was flaking apart. And after I made the recording, the lacquer did flake off. So if this recording wasn't captured in this MP3, this song would have been lost, for all time unless another one surfaces.
That's amazing. Let's take a listen. Daryl Banks, It's Not Fair to Me. Hales, do you know what that instrumentation is there during the break?
We've been trying to guess. People have suggested that it's a bassoon or a bass clarinet, maybe with some kind of effect on it.
I was thinking, is that an oboe? it's not often really... you hear woodwinds in soul songs.
But it's got some kind of studio treatment on it, maybe an effect or something, like possibly a Leslie speaker or a tremolo or some kind of thing, giving it a strange out of phase effect. But it's interesting because on Daryl Banks' studio recordings that were compiled on the Stax LP, they're not psychedelic in any way. So this is kind of like, by this point, you know, it's like the Beatles are happening and soul music is getting affected by the, you know, psychedelic trends of the day. That's something that didn't, you know, happen on the records that came out, you know, during his lifetime.
Given the volume of music that you have in the shop and the number of tracks that are rapidly, we're kind of losing to the ages. Do you ever just wish you could switch careers and become more of a full-time archivist?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot more that that could be done there. But at the same time, Detroit, it's that Daryl Banks track is special because it's one of the only things that you could add. I mean, it's been looked at to death under a microscope by decades from people around the world who are all fascinated. So to find a new recording from the 60s is kind of difficult to do because it's been anthologized to death. But I like just swimming in it and, you know, being active in the community and, you know, circulating this stuff to other people who will, I mean, when you see these kind of records played live for a room full of people that are getting it, it can really, you know, make you feel better. It can improve the quality of life for a whole region, you know. So it's important work to kind of keep that stuff in circulation too, either by playing it out for crowds to dance for it or by getting the records into people's hands.
It looks like the last track that you brought for us is from a DJ that people might know from around Detroit, Jay Daniel. This is called Sundance from a record that he put out on his own Watusi Records label, an album called Tala. You want to set this one up for us?
Yeah. Jay Daniel he's, you know, younger on the end of some of these guys who've had, you know, decades-long careers. This record just kind of, I've always thought that he was good, but this one I thought, you know, right away, like, oh, I'll be listening to this for the rest of my life. I mean, what struck me about it was I have no idea how in this day and age someone could make music so calm. So I think he's touched on something really special there because this is only one track out of a four-sided LP, and it kind of maintains the same relaxing quality that definitely takes you someplace else that you want to be.
Was the vibe on this record very far out of Jay's wheelhouse?
Well, the nice thing about it is it doesn't feel necessarily aimed for the dance floor as much as some singles. It's a double album that you want to listen to the whole thing and keep flipping it, not like a single where a DJ would use it as a tool, you know, to, you know, get a certain response from the dance floor. But it's more like something you put on while you, you know, cook dinner and water your plants or something.
The polyrhythm in there is really something.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great layering going on and a lot of stuff that your mind can really engage and escape in.
Do you know if Jay gets a band together for his studio sessions or if he's more of a bedroom producer?
I think this is all him.
Wow. Well, it's just gorgeous. Thanks for bringing it in.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of people are feeling 2020 is a year of many stressors. I don't know that you intended to bring us some songs to help us get centered and find some peace, but it sure seemed like it worked out that way.
Excellent. No, that's something I'm constantly looking for.
What do you tell people when they walk into the store and they're looking for something to just take them out of themselves?
I mean, honestly, I would rather teach someone to fish than fish for them. So my role there is to try to get the things out so you can look at them. And I tell people, here are the listening stations with the headphones. Now get your hands dirty.
Brad Hales from People's Records. I guess I just want to say thank you for your service. We appreciate all the years in the shop and for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Still to come, Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha. She became a household name for her work on drawing attention to the Flint water public health crisis. And now this pediatrician has been diagnosed herself with COVID-19. We'll speak with her in a moment. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. You know, for a lot of people, COVID-19 isn't real until they know someone who has it. Well, now someone we all know has it. Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha is a pediatrician based in Flint. She was one of the early voices sounding alarms on the city's water crisis, most especially its effect on children. Dr. Hanna Atisha is now on a break from her public health work. She's at home, tending to her own case of the new coronavirus. We reached her today via Skype.
It is great to be with you, April.
You tested positive for the coronavirus.
Yes, I got my results yesterday morning.
How are you doing?
I'm doing much better. I'm absolutely on the mend. I think I probably had a more mild case. It started a couple of weeks ago with what I thought was a bad cold. I had fever, aches, and fatigue. I had a headache, a mild sore throat. It lasted a couple of days. I have underlying asthma, and I began to cough more, and it was like this deep old man dry cough that persisted. I used my inhaler. I took Tylenol, drank a lot of fluids, vitamin C. And then after a few days, I developed the most bizarre symptoms of loss of smell and loss of taste. And being really kind of obsessed with the news and the medical literature that's coming out about COVID, I knew that was one of the increasingly reported signs of having coronavirus. And that's what prompted me to get tested.
Yeah. I've been wanting to hear this from someone with medical training, just like what it's like. There have been so many comparisons, probably inept to the flu or the common cold. How would you say it stacks up to other regular conditions you've had?
Yeah, you know, I think it's more potent. It waxes and wanes. So, you know, I thought I was like better after a couple of days, but then I wasn't totally better. Then like the cough got worse, and then maybe I felt a little better, but then it got worse again. So I think it lingers longer. And then obviously, like I think I had a more mild case, and I'm hearing from so many of my colleagues, obviously the severe respiratory breathing issues that we're seeing, the rapid decompensation and needing to be on oxygen and ventilator support. But we're also hearing more about, you know, severe cases with gastrointestinal issues and neurological issues and more cases in children than I thought, you know, that was reported in other countries.
Were you seeing many patients in your practice who were sick?
I fortunately was not. I haven't been to clinic in probably 2.5 weeks before I had any symptoms. And I'm so grateful that I've been really home and isolated before I even had any of these symptoms. You know, this is the winter. This is when we have a lot of respiratory issues in children. See lots of kids with flu and colds, and coronavirus is the common cold. So it's actually something we've always seen, not this type of coronavirus, but we've always seen kids with respiratory issues this time of year.
This seems like a crazy question to ask an MD, but would you say you were able to take precautions with patients who were sick?
You know, I wasn't, you know, I don't have as much clinical time as I used to. My time is largely leading a lot of the public health response and plan. So I'm not in clinic seeing patients as much as usual. But my colleagues who are not only in Flint, but really throughout the country, this, you know, network of incredible healthcare workers who have been at the forefront, what we are consistently hearing is that there's not enough precautions in place, especially with PPE, the personal protection equipment, that people are having to use the same mask for the whole shift or the whole week, that there's a rationing of you know, the PPE equipment. And that's not good enough. You know, we were really behind the eight ball in this crisis. Like, you know, obviously this, you know, this was an infectious disease. We couldn't have really prevented it. It's a, you know, it's a natural phenomenon, but we could have prevented this crisis where we are currently are in this nation because of lack of testing and lack of protection equipment, which is where we're at right now. Yeah. So that's what I'm hearing from my colleagues. I'm hearing a lot of folks who feel overwhelmed, who feel scared, who are no longer coming back to their homes because of fear of infecting their own families.
Do you have suspicions about how you might have contracted it?
Oh, that is a great question. And I think it's gone through my head. I have no idea. You know, I live in Metro Detroit, which is obviously a hot spot. My husband works in Detroit. So many cases in Detroit. Obviously, also, you know, seeing patients, but I don't think it was there. I was in New York City in early March. So the weekend of March 6th to 8th. And I think, but I'm not sure, but I think that's probably where I was exposed because my symptoms started about 10 days after that.
Hmm. Do you have any worries that you might have passed it along?
Of course. I think everybody who has this overwhelming sense of guilt and anxiety that they may have shared it with others. You know, we were really early to kind of lock down our house. We've been living in our own family bubble. Nobody's come in. Nobody's come out. We do grocery delivery. We don't talk to anybody. But that is a privilege that I have because of being able to take things like sick leave and work from home. And that is not a privilege that so many people have in this country where they have to go to work, even if they're not feeling well and could potentially be exposing others because their life and their family's livelihood depends on it. So, you know, I think I haven't left my house since I have had symptoms. So I'm reassured that I probably didn't infect, you know, more people.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha. She's a pediatrician who works in Flint and lives in Greater Detroit. And we're talking to her for many reasons, but also because she has tested positive for the coronavirus. We need to ask about your work community. Genesee County is reporting 349 cases, 10 deaths so far. That's official state results and, of course, may not reflect the true spread of the virus in Flint. What are you seeing among your colleagues and people that you know and patients that you do know about?
Yeah, so what we are hearing is a lot of folks who don't feel well, but obviously don't know for sure that they have coronavirus, but they suspect they do. The profound lack of testing in our country is making it really difficult for us to really identify the scope of this problem, not only in Genesee County, but our whole state, but really our whole nation. There's just not enough testing for everybody to get tested if they think they have this. So those numbers are a massive underestimation in Genesee County and throughout. What we are hearing or seeing in Genesee County is that, you know, we have not gotten hit as much as Metro Detroit has. But I think that's just a matter of time as the virus continues to have community spread. Our hospitals and our healthcare systems will be also at the state of capacity or near capacity that we are seeing in Metro Detroit. Something else that's concerning in Genesee County is very much like Detroit. We have overwhelming disparities, health disparities, chronic conditions like obesity and high blood pressure and diabetes that come with poverty, which are these pre-existing risk factors that can make this infection more severe and more deadly.
What are your concerns about patients and their families right now?
Oh, I have so many concerns. You know, like I said earlier, I'm really at this kind of state of privilege that I was able to stay home and rest and take precautions and be supported and be able to really kind of to fight this infection and recover. I worry that my families in Flint don't have those same resources, the same ability to be able to rest and be cared for and to be able to recover on top of so many of these kind of pre-existing disparities. I worry especially about the children and families in Flint, about the long-term consequences. So, you know, obviously Flint has you know, is in the midst of our water crisis. We've been working towards our recovery. Our water crisis has this potential for long-term health and neurodevelopmental consequences. And then we have this added public health crisis, which is creating gaps in education, gaps in nutrition services, gaps in the enrichment resources that our kids need to fully recover from our water crisis. So it's you know, that is what I increasingly worry about in Flint, is that, you know, the enrichments that so many other children have, who are, you know, doing remote learning and have Wi-Fi in their home and all these other things are not available for families in Flint.
I read this morning that some of the infrastructure replacements that were intended to address the water crisis have had to be put on hold. It's temporary, but the point is nobody knows how long. What do you know about the state of access to fresh water right now?
Oh, that is a great question. And this has been a concern both in Flint and in Detroit. So both communities have struggled with shutoffs. Flint's mayor, Neely, when he came into office last November, ended shutoffs. So there, we have no new shutoffs in Flint for non-payment. However, we have legacy shutoffs, and nobody really knows the exact number. I heard at one point there may have been up to 5,000 homes with legacy shutoffs, where people do not have access to water, are unable to wash their hands, which is so critical in fighting this pandemic. So my understanding is that the city, they are trying to restart those homes with shutoffs. It's not like a simple flip of a switch. It takes time. It often takes plumbers to go into the home. There's often maybe damage or issues with getting folks reconnected.
Yeah, if it's anything like Detroit's plan, which involves a low cost $25 bill, I mean, you have to go through all the steps of reconnection, and you're still going to have to pay off that bill eventually. It's yes. Possible to imagine some customers might just decide, I'm going to try to ride it out.
Yes, I was so excited to hear about the governor's executive order that is committing, I think, $2 million to help with these restorations. So hopefully some of these fines and these fees will be alleviated, and we could really focus on the public health need to have access to safe, clean drinking water.
Mona, the state of Michigan was not tracking the demographics of COVID-19 cases until pretty recently, talking, you know, in terms of race and age and other aspects that might enlighten us as to who's getting sick. Was that a surprise to you that information wasn't being recorded?
I wasn't surprised, but I'm grateful that information is now being shared, although incomplete. There's a lot of folks that we don't know their race. And the information that has come out thus far really confirms what many people have been observing, where there's once again disparities in who's getting sick and most unfortunately who's dying from this. And it's predominantly an African-American population, just disproportionate to the percentage of African-Americans in the state.
The statistic that we've seen that's most current is that 40% of the coronavirus deaths are of people who contract the disease are African-American people. What does this suggest to you about how the health system is responding in communities of color?
Yeah, I don't think it speaks as much to the healthcare system, but I think it speaks more to our public health system. So public health is how we keep people well, and healthcare is how we make sure that we can help people who are already sick. As a nation, we do a really good job and we spend a lot of money on health care, but we don't do a great job in terms of public health and investing in the public health infrastructure to make sure that all people can stay healthy. And what does that mean? Those are things like poverty and addressing racism and historically racism and transportation access and nutrition services and, you know, child care and health care. These are all the building blocks of what makes communities healthy. And in places like Detroit or predominantly minority communities, we lack in all of those investments in what makes people fundamentally healthy. We have exceedingly high rates of poverty. We have lots of, you know, biases and legacy and current impacts of racism, lack of grocery stores, violence, all these underlying issues that lead to chronic diseases, that decrease immunity, that should make it no surprise that we now see these disparities.
You have spent so much time looking at kids who've been exposed to lead and trying to figure out what should be done to support them in their educations. I mean, is it possible for any therapist or any ICU or any emergency room or any ventilator to fully remediate what public health has failed to do on the front end?
No, and it doesn't make any economic sense. You know, nor does it make any common. As a nation, we always seem to function reactively rather than proactively. And that's what we're doing in Flint. We had this water crisis, and now we're spending all this money and resources to make sure that our kids don't see the consequences. But it's the same lesson here for this pandemic. If only we had invested in the public health systems, in the surveillance programs, in the technology, in the science, if we respected the science and the scientists, if we, you know, built out testing, if we kept a pandemic office, all of these things are preventative measures that could have prevented this crisis where we're at. And no amount of ventilators and no amount of ICU beds can really make up for what we failed to do in prevention and public health investment.
Can I just ask, at home, what's it like in your corner of Detroit right now? I mean, the city is just awash in over 5,000 cases of coronavirus, including your own.
Yeah. So I'm sorry I had to add a number to that statistic to increase those rates. I don't know what it's like because I have not left my home. We are in absolute kind of home isolation quarantine. We play outside, but we don't leave kind of the boundaries of our house. That's fortunately kind of what I have been seeing around me. However, there's a lot of folks that are still not taking this seriously. A lot of folks who are going out and having play dates or meeting friends or socializing, or just going, you know, to the store for, you know, random things that aren't essential. So, what I am seeing is reassuring. I think it's hard for so many people to stay home and to feel bored. But listen to the governor. We've got great kind of leadership at our state level. And I think the most important message is that, you know, staying home will absolutely save lives because that's one less person that could be potentially infected that could spread it to others.
You going to take care of yourself?
Absolutely. I am absolutely on the mend. I feel so much better. I really wish I get my sense of smell and taste back soon because I love eating. I am Arab American. We cook with garlic and onion and spices and herbs, and it has been so hard to just eat what tastes like paper every single day. But I'm also so excited that I can play a small part in helping others. When I got my test result back yesterday, I immediately signed up to a research project being run by Michigan State University to donate my plasma, which has COVID-fighting antibodies, to others who may be sicker. So since I kind of shared that result yesterday, more than 700 people have signed up to be part of that website where they can all, people who've also recovered and can now also donate their antibodies to others who aren't doing as well.
Dr. Mona Hannah Atisha is a pediatrician with a practice in Flint. She's also a public health advocate and the author of What the Eyes Don't See. She joined us by Skype from her home. Dr. Mona, you take care.
Thank you, April. Take care. Bye-bye.
That's our show for today. Today's edition of Stateside was directed and engineered by Laura Weber Davis. Producers include Mike Blank, April Van Buren, and Mercedes Mejia. Stateside is a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm April Baer. Please do stay safe out there. Stay home, and thanks for listening.